Welcome to Reading Deadly Troubadours. I'm author Brent Thomas, and join with me as I read from the second novel of my Deadly Troubadours series, Sand, Sea, and Stone. Let's begin, shall we? Chapter 4, Day 1, Midday. The center of Trist was marked by a series of rings. These rings were made from stone tiles of different shades, laid together with stones of similar shades. The intended effect was a circular rainbow of brilliant colors, exclaiming the very center of the city. For once, the city succeeded in one of its goals. Despite decades of constant foot traffic, monthly full moon theatrical performances, seasonal orchestral outings, and sheer exposure to the elements of sun and rain, the colors embedded in the stone tiles seemed to gain an intensity of color rather than the expected slow fade. From atop the 8 towers that bordered the rainbow courtyard, if one were to look down, it would appear as if they were staring down at perfect rainbows. Depending on the light, they could appear brilliantly bright as during the midday sun, or ghostly incandescent as when the full moon shone its light upon the courtyard. Never to shy away from splendor, the Tristian council did not stop there. At the very center of the multicolored circles sat a moderately sized 3-story structure. It was square in shape and could easily be circumnavigated in about 150 paces. The building's grandeur was not in its size, but in its embellishments. The entire structure seemed to be a single piece of deliberately shaped and ornately designed silver that was kept a constant high polish. Its intricately carved and decorated surface shone in the light of stars, not only the close star of day, but the far ones of night. All the while, the pavilion reflected the colors of the surrounding rainbow rings. The combination of the rainbow courtyard and the silver pavilion was highly regarded by all who beheld it, and filled any native Tristian's heart with pride. Therefore, it was only natural that this was a preferred location for meeting and celebrating visiting dignitaries. The silver pavilion was perfect for such occasions, as not only was it rumored to be as luxurious on the inside as it appeared on the outside, but it also had rooftop access. From the rooftop, not only could addresses be made, but the visiting public could easily catch glimpses of the dignitaries and their retinues. Public interest in such visiting celebrity could be fairly accurately measured by how many bands of color were occupied by the townspeople. Tradition and security dictated that the red and orange bands be roped off during such a visit, so the public could only advance as far as the yellow band. If the crowd did not extend at least through the green band, it was not considered noteworthy. When the rainbow courtyard was crammed past the last band of color, naturally a violet one, then that was a most celebrated visitor indeed. It should be noted that the council was not above driving up attendance by offering bribes in the way of both coin and food. Wine and spirits had been offered as well in the past, but a soused and uninterested crowd offered a much more surly welcome than desired, as was sorely learned after a few disastrous attempts at flattery through bribery. Today, the day before the celebration, the grounds were mostly empty. Just a few young couples dotted the courtyard, and those pairings were eager to avoid others and concentrate on their private romances. There were also 3 scattered individuals who had the look of being homeless. In some parts of town, Trist's homeless were known to be insistent beggars, but in this area they mostly kept to themselves. The troubadours were initially surprised there weren't any scarlets maintaining a presence, but then they supposed that with tonight being the actual grand ball, perhaps they were being kept there as a show of force. And there was the caution against questioning good fortune instead of putting it to good use. Besides, they had work to get done. Each of the four of them had their own task to accomplish, their own piece of the puzzle to set in place. Hopefully, each piece would work together in harmony, like falling dominoes, to create a great image that the four troubadours could take pride in. Naturally, the towers were locked. The task of opening them fell to Demetrius, who used every opportunity to boast to the others that he was, in fact, a trained thief. "It's very impressive," remarked Kestra after the third reminder. "But do you think you could get the door open before someone takes notice?" Demetrius frowned. The heat was making his hand sweat, and the sweat was doing nothing to improve his lockpicking skills. "It's the glare," he protested. "It's getting in my eyes." Kestra was in the middle of opening her mouth to inform him of the obvious fact that they were currently standing in the shade cast by the tower they were infiltrating, when the click of the lock turning over and the opening of the door made her decision to leave it alone. She didn't want to make the little mage feel bad, but she did have more faith in his magics than in his thieving. Still, he got the job done. Kestra raced up the flight of stairs. They were all taking a turn as Demetrius managed to open the doors. They needed to gain access to at least four of the towers for the plan to be successful. Breaching all eight would add extra flair to their performance, but wasn't absolutely necessary. Still, they were trying to move fast enough to achieve that goal. She reached the top and waited for Talbot to appear in the window of the opposite tower. While waiting, she gave a tug on the pulley system set up in the tower. The cord holding the decorative streamers was taut with the weight of the decorations. Kestra could move the line, but it was a strain. Having another set of hands on the opposite side would be useful. She hoped it would be enough, not so much for her and Talbert, but for the pairing of Alexander and Demetrius. Still, time was a factor, and they agreed this would be the fastest way. She readied their little surprise on the line and waited for Talbert. Talbert was puffing when he reached the top of the tower. He could just make out Kestra waiting in the far window. For a second, he was reminded of a storybook princess waiting for her prince. He put the idea aside as he doubted it was a comparison that the fighter would welcome. Although there was something about her thick, rich red hair and fine features that made him wonder how she would look in a gown. He supposed he would find out tonight at the ball. Maybe there would be time for dancing. From across the way, she waved impatiently, putting his mind back on track. Talbert went through the identical motions of setup as Kestra before him. Then, together, they began the process of pulling the wire and decorations across the courtyard, while affixing their surprise. Halfway through, another set of streamers began to move. That must mean that Demetrius and Alexander were also setting up. Hopefully, it meant the other doors were open as well, so when they finished with this set of wires, they could simply move on to setting up the next tower. And that was exactly how the system progressed. In the courtyard itself, little regard was given to the moving streamers. People noticed, but the slow crawl of streamers on a wire did little to excite the imagination, and was quickly dismissed as just another aspect of preparation. Which, in a sense, it was. But the final aspect of preparation was secret to all except Talbert. He had an idea that he was sure would work, and he wanted to shock his troopmates along with the rest of Trist. To preserve the secrecy, this meant that as he finished up his set of towers, he alone would need to make one final preparation here, and then he would need to travel to the towers visited by his friends, under the ruse of a final inspection, and add his own touch to those as well. It was time-consuming, and the others weren't wild about waiting around in the courtyard when at any moment the Scarlets could show up as a security precaution. Talbert tried to assure them a final check would ensure perfection, and that if the Scarlets weren't here now, they likely weren't going to show up at all. They told him that he shouldn't be such a clucking hen. In return, he said they might as well just accept him for the artist he was. At that, Kestra gave him a look, and Talbert was certain she suspected his real motive. But then she shrugged. her way of informing him she wouldn't spoil whatever he was trying to keep secret by voicing suspicion. As Talbert was preparing the final tower, he was smiling to himself about being right about the Scarlets. It appeared the Tristian guards were not going to make an appearance. All their rushing was for nothing. He took one final look at the window. It was late in the day, and the sun was almost directly at eye level, and blinding at that. Talbert gave a quick nod and began to head back down the stairs. Then it hit him. Something had looked off, out of place. He went back to the window and looked out. What was it? Something had caught his eye and struck him as wrong. The lines? No, they looked fine. They'd even stopped swaying after being pulled around all day. Nothing with the courtyard itself. Maybe the pavilion? He scanned it carefully, but could see nothing amiss. Absently, he chewed on his lip as he tried to remember what had been out of place. All that was left was the towers. He didn't see anything amiss. Not now. But he had seen something, though. He was sure of it. Wasn't he? He looked out again. The only thing of note was his three friends waving to him to come down. It was getting late, and they needed to change for tonight. Maybe he hadn't seen anything, or perhaps he had just seen the flutter of a streamer and thought it something more. That had to be it. If he tried hard, he could likely convince himself of that. In the far tower, the figure stirred, and a slow stream of breath was let out. It was foolish to think that at the distance between the towers that breathing would be detected. The figure knew it was impossible, but, all the same, when Talbert was seen returning to the window, fresh breaths were halted. Silly. Paranoid. But that was what was done. After all, who would think that Talbert could have noticed something amiss at this distance? But he must have seen something. Why else would he return to the window and stare in this direction? Those children that made up the deadly troubadours counted themselves as so clever. They seemed to assume that just because they saw no one taking notice, there was no one watching them. All the self-assuredness of youth. How simple it had been to just wait and watch and figure out their pattern. How cocky they were. They neglected keeping account of people in the streets. They neglected leaving one of their number on watch to make sure they were not being observed or, more importantly, followed. But why should they suspect someone would be after them? After all they had done was bring a dragon to the very gates of the city a scant few months prior. And who could have been privy to that particular information? Why, none but the completely trustworthy Order of Free Thinkers. And that was a collection of nothing but the most honest of individuals. Certainly, none of those braggarts would be foolish enough to get caught while attempting some stupid prank. And even if such an individual were to be arrested and brought in, a true member of the Order wouldn't agree to keep an eye on one of their own, say, the deadly troubadours, even if doing so meant escaping a beating and even receiving a little extra jingle of coin in their purse. The figure spat. There had been a moment when thought was given to just taking them out today, right there in the courtyard. But that wouldn't be a full repayment. That wouldn't stain their reputation in a fitting manner. It would have been so easy, but not as rewarding. Still, it had been a nice fantasy. A fantasy that felt all the more real by actually taking aim. But that had been a stupid risk. Talbert, the scholar of the group, had been underestimated. Talbert, who had been in the middle of the crosshairs, had suddenly looked in this direction. Perhaps he had seen something, a glint of light, perhaps. Maybe he had just felt a chill up his spine when death was eyeing him from afar. But Talbert had brushed that feeling away, and now he and the rest of his little crew, the mage, the girl, and the musician, were leaving the courtyard. Maybe they were off to prepare for the dance. The figure smiled. Would they be foolish enough to give in to drink? Tomorrow would be an eventful day. If the four were fighting off the after effects of alcohol, it would make it that much easier. The figure let go with a smile at the thought of a tryst free of the deadly troubadours.
Hey everyone, this is Brent. If you've been enjoying this podcast, there's a few things I'd like you to do to help me out. First of all, please rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, and then go over to Goodreads. At Goodreads, you can rate and review both Deadly Troubadours and Sand, Sea, and Stone. Then you might as well go on over to Facebook and like the Brent Thomas author page. To see what I'm up to, you can follow me on Instagram or at Twitter. Don't worry about all of those addresses, because you know what? They're all going to be in the show notes at the end. You can also go to my website, which is deadlytroubadour.com. If you really want to support me, you know, with cash, you can go to patreon.com/Brent Thomas. If you want to purchase a copy of Deadly Troubadours, you can get a paperback through Amazon or an ebook anywhere ebooks are sold. Or you can contact me directly for either. Sadly, Sand, Sea, and Stone is not yet available. Thanks for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. And you know what? Have a great day.